Blog Talk Radio.
Our roots began in Africa, where we enjoyed self-determination and freedom, which were rooted in our sovereignty. Peace, family. Welcome to Dare to Win, the Us Lifting Us weekly radio program that airs every Thursday evening from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Dare to Win is the place where we have soaping conversation about the economic plight of Black people and the imperatives that we build the global economic machinery that will free us and once again put us on the path of making history. We, at Us Lifting Us, have developed an exact methodology on how to build this global machinery and pass it forward to our children and future generations. To join tonight's conversation, please call 929-477-2789. Press the number 1 on your phone when you want to make a comment or ask a question. If you prefer to listen on your computer, go to www.usliftingus.com. Scroll down to the bottom of the homepage. Click on the Dare to Win button. And then click on Listen Live. At that time, you will be on the Blog Talk Radio site. If you want to get reminders from Blog Talk Radio for upcoming Dare to Win programs, please click on the follow button. Ulu members, we have our own social media community. Please join if you have not already done so. There is a Dare to Win group, and we would like to have your feedback on past Dare to Win programs, as well as topic suggestions for future programs. Go to www.usliftingus.com. You can reach the Ulu community through the members-only portal. When you register for the Ulu community, please use the same name you used when you joined Ulu. Hold a date for our 2024 Ulu Convention and Annual Meeting will be held on Saturday, March 9th and Sunday, March 10th in Atlanta. More information will be forthcoming, but put it on your calendar so you don't miss. I'm Sister Q, and joining me for this evening's discussion is Brother Anki. Tonight's topic is the limitations of Black identity only. Peace, Brother Anki. How are you doing tonight?
Peace, Sister Q. I'm well. Good to hear you. Good to be on with you and the family.
It's good to have you on. It's a very interesting topic you have tonight. So how did you come up with that topic? And in your opinion, what are the limitations of Black identity only?
Well, thank you, Sister Q. I've been watching the media and the conversations that we have amongst ourselves on social media, and frequently we seem to be identifying ourselves basically as Black people. And it raised in my mind the question, we've talked about this on this program before, but it raises once again the question, how do we self-identify? We have accepted disunity on this question for far too long. Are we Black? Are we African-American? Are we African? And why does it matter? Whether we admit it or not, the non-melanated world sees us as Black people, and we can be seen coming a block away. But this is only half the truth. Yes, we are Black. We're melanated people. We agree to that, and we have no problem with that. The corporate media, however, perpetuates this deception by referring to us as Black or some hyphenated creation such as African American. Most of us accept African American or Black and use these terms interchangeably. Herein lies much of our identity crisis and dilemma, I think. When we say that we are Black people, and that's primarily the only designation that we're using, we fail to recognize that Black is only a color descriptor. It does not connect us with a land base. It doesn't connect us with a common ancestry or a common history or a common worldview. When white people designate themselves as white, it is understood that they share Europe as a common point of origin. It does not matter if they reside in America or other parts of the globe. Because Africa has been denigrated and maligned for so long and always associated as being synonymous with ignorance and backwardness, savagery and filth, and has contributed nothing of value to world civilization, many of us are ashamed to be called African. So our default identity has become Black or African American. To break out of this vicious and self-destructive construct, we would be wise to self-identify as African, period, full stop. To move to this position requires study on our part to understand that the full contribution Africa has made and is making to the world's civilization. Anthony Browder's book, Nile Valley Contributions to Civilization, is a great starting point. It should be required reading in every school system around the world, and I mean that for all children. Chancellor Williams' book, The Destruction of Black Civilization, Great Issues of a Race from 4500 BC to 2000 AD, is a companion book that also should be in all of our libraries. The point that we're making is that Black only as a designation of who we are too limiting, and it disconnects us from the source of power that we have come from, i.e. the African continent as our land base, and also an African history, and most importantly, an African worldview. We must, in addition to saying that we are Black, we must also acknowledge and embrace that we are African. We said that this connects us to the land and it connects us to a worldview, and that is what makes us distinct and unique as a people in the world. When I say worldview, I mean the cultural framework through which we look at reality and interpret reality and our position in reality. This African worldview, there's so much confusion around what is African, and that's another reason why people shy away from being called African, because everything that's being done on the African continent today is not African. As a matter of fact, much of the behavior that we see taking place on the African continent is European behavior masquerading as African. So many of us are fooled because we do not understand what is authentically African and what is not African. While this means we must do much more study, let me suggest that gaining an understanding of Ma'at is a good starting place. And if we start understanding at a deeper level what Ma'at really is, we'll be moving in the right direction. Now, when we say Ma'at, many of the people, many of our listeners on the call tonight recognize that Ma'at means truth and justice, righteousness, order, balance, harmony, and reciprocity. It is but one of 11 principles that make up the African tree of life that provide an entire schematic or framework of how the world actually is and how we as human beings in the world are structured. So that what we are arguing for in tonight's conversation with our audience tonight, Sister Q, is that we're Black, mm-hmm. we're African, and that Ma'at is the philosophical framework out of which we operate. Once we embrace all of that, now we begin to have a more holistic and complete sense of our identity. And we will not be so easily divided by people who are working against our interests. So that the idea of we're melanated people, yes, we're Black. We come from the African continent, and most importantly, we embrace an African worldview, an African sense of how we see the world, how we see reality. And that African worldview is grounded in the philosophical concept of Ma'at. Now, when we put all of that together, that becomes a very powerful paradigm for us to stand on and to operate from. Failing to do that leaves us vulnerable to people who seek to divide us and conquer us and keep us subjugated by separating us by these artificially drawn countries like Ghana or Guinea-Bissau or Mali or Burkina Faso or Rwanda or any of those artificial boundaries that were created on the African continent in the Berlin Conference in 1884-1885, when the European powers carved up the African continent into spheres of influence that they themselves would control, extract the wealth from, and do whatever they wanted to. Those boundaries had no relationship to the people that lived in those areas, how they were connected by history and language and custom and ancestry. And so all of this time, we find ourselves divided. And then you throw in the transatlantic slave trade that carted millions of us from the continent of Africa into the Caribbean and North and South America, and now we are just completely confused. We see ourselves as Cuban or Bahamian or quote-unquote African-American, and we fail to make the connection, as Baba John Henry Clark has so often stated, it's not where the slave ships dropped us off that's important, it's where they picked us up. So we have to get back to this sense of being an African people, and beyond saying that we are an African people, to understanding the value and the contribution and the significance of what African civilizations have contributed to the world's progress. I mean, we often hear people say, oh, yeah, black people gave, African people gave language to the world and science and medicine and mathematics and philosophy and religion and music and writing, and all of that's true. The question is do we embrace that? Do we have that as part of the core of our self-identity? Do we recognize how pivotal and foundational we are to life on this planet? Do we take ourselves that seriously? And some of us would argue that we're moving in that direction. We haven't gotten there just yet. And so there are a lot of things that we allow to divide us, and this is the challenge that we're facing as we are gathered together in this family circle tonight, as you like to call it, Sister Q, deliberating around what it means to be African in the world as it currently exists, and then what are the implications of that, and how do we use it as a mechanism to organize ourselves, to harness our power so we can once again take our place of leadership on the world stage. Let me just pause there to see if there are any questions or if this has raised any thoughts and questions for you, Sister Q.
I have no question. I like what you are saying, particularly about the standard to which we would hold ourselves, so that would prevent division among us, and we'll be better able to recognize which of us really identify, not just by our skin color, but by our behavior. And I think that would be very important. We do not have any hands up on the board right now. So
okay. You made a very important statement. You said not only by skin color, but by our behavior. And that is a critical term for us to not gloss over or run away from too quickly. And where I'm going with that, Sister Q, is that behavior is influenced by attitude. In other words, how we feel about a certain thing or subject or idea, that's an attitude that we hold. We hold an attitude about Africa. We hold attitudes about racism. We hold attitudes about cooperative economics and money. Well, those attitudes are informed by a value system. In other words, what we feel about certain things is driven by how much value we attribute to certain things. And so all human behavior begins at the point of the value system that is embraced by the people in a given society or community. And so very seldom do we hear conversations around, we see the behaviors. We see what is going on, for example, in Gaza right now. And all of this war rhetoric about revenge on Hamas and the Palestinian people, and all of us are having some kind of emotional reaction to that. The deeper question that we need to ask ourselves is, what are the underlying values that are forming attitudes that in turn lead to certain behaviors by the people acting in these places. So all human activity traces back to what are the underlying values that are at the core of who people are. That is where we as African people must understand the work that we have to do first. In other words, Ma'at is a value system, just like Nguza Saba that we celebrate during Kwanzaa. So Ma'at has principles, truth and justice and righteousness and order and balance and harmony and reciprocity, so that any kind of behavior that goes against truth and justice and righteousness and order and balance and harmony and reciprocity, we African people would view that as antithetical to healthy community or antithetical to life. In other words, it is opposed to the universe, because the universe operates on truth and justice and righteousness and harmony and balance and reciprocity. So that we have to begin to identify what are the values that we as African people are operating from in 2023. Are we operating from an African value system, or are we operating from a European value system that is based on materialism and competition and individualism and violence and domination? Because too often we see in our community, and I think many people that have come on our airways, Sister Q, we oftentimes express our dismay at the level of the breakdown that we see in our community. In other words, individualism seems to have taken root and now is more important as a value than community. Competition seems to be more important to us than cooperation. Materialism certainly seems to be more important to us than a sense of spirit. And so now we see all of these anti-people behaviors just galloping and running roughshod through our community. Well, these are the European values that have been injected into our hearts and our minds because of the 400-year sojourn of our people under the domination of these European systems. So that, again, back to this African worldview, what we first must do as a people is make a very hard decision about what values will we follow. And values become important because they are connected to how people survive. They're not just good ideas that people have. Values, what makes a value is it contributes to your survival. And not only your ability to survive, but your ability to thrive and to flourish. So that for thousands of years, for millennia, African people embraced this value system that we see expressed in Ma'at. We also see it expressed in the Nguza Saba, which we celebrate during Kwanzaa, the unity, the oneness of everything, self-determination, collective work and responsibility, cooperative economics, purpose, creativity, and faith. These two are part of the value systems that animated African people and African civilization. We must get back to those values guiding our thinking and our attitudes and subsequently our behavior. That is why we hear too often that these Europeans are waging cultural warfare. It's all culture wars. But what is not clear is we're not really having a – we're not – to talk about it as a culture war doesn't really get down to the heart of the problem. what is really taking place is a clash of values. Will we operate on African values of truth and justice and harmony and balance and reciprocity and order, which are tied to the way the actual universe is put together? Or will the values of white supremacy and racism, the materialism, the individualism, the competition, the violence, the purposelessness, will those be the values that dominate our attitudes and our behaviors? So this really is a life and death struggle that we're in. And the only way that we will extricate ourselves and put ourselves back on a path towards sustainability and viability, we must build into our psyche and into our consciousness once again these African values. Absent that process, what we will find is that even when we are in control of certain systems and power arrangements, we will be operating and behaving just as white folks. And we've seen that too often in the way that in many places, African melanated folk operate the school system. So we're on the boards of education, we're the superintendents of the county school systems, we're the teachers, we're the deputy superintendents. We have all of these positions where we literally are in control of the entire educational apparatus, and for the last 100 years, all we've been doing is replicating white values. And mm-hmm. and we've been approaching the study of the various subjects through a white lens or a European lens rather than an African lens. And so this is where we find ourselves this evening. And that is the challenge that is in front of us and why we've had this conversation before. But until we begin to take very seriously, how do we adopt and embrace these African values and begin to behave from them? Until we figure that out collectively and actually do that as a people, as a community, we will continue to be misguided and confused, and we won't get the results that we're looking for. So that's the point that we want to make there. Now, in addition to all of that, we still have to take recognition of the fact that we are in a war. And Dr. Frances Cress Welsing, in her seminal work, The ISIS Papers to the Colors, that was copywritten in 1991, she provides a definition of racism that all melanated people must understand or else we will perish. And what Dr. Welsing gave us was this definition: racism / white supremacy is a global system of domination by people who classify themselves as white, who dominate and control people they classify as non-white, and this is the crux of her definition, for the purpose of genetic survival. Now, Dr. Welsing, when she walked on the earth with us, especially during the 1980s and 90s and early 2000s, gave lecture after lecture after lecture and was really making progress in helping us to understand how insidious and how dangerous racism, white supremacy is to our understanding. But I don't know, Sister Q, you tell me, some of the teachings that she had worked, building on the work of Dr. Neely Fuller, while that was very prominent in our communities through the early 2000s, I think we've gotten a long way from appreciating and understanding the work that she did and the legacy of scientific understanding of racism, white supremacy, that she left us. But this idea that racism is a global system, it's not just something that affects us here in North America or the Caribbean. It is a global system, so it impacts Africa, it impacts Asia, it impacts Europe, it impacts the entire human family. A global system of domination whereby people who classify themselves as white dominate and control people they classify as non-white, which you and I, Sister Q, would say is we are melanated people. That's really what we're talking about mm-hmm. here, for the purpose mm-hmm. of genetic survival. In other words, Dr. Neely Fuller and Dr. Welsing identified the fact that what is the thing that is driving white behavior is they are trying to maintain whiteness in a world where they are one-tenth of a population, of a global population, that is nine-tenths colored. So that nine-tenths of the planet, of the people on the planet, are black, brown, red, and yellow. And mm-hmm. that whiteness is a recessive genetic trait. So that whenever there's intercourse between people, melanated people and non-melanated people, the children come out melanated. They right. come out colored. They come out. They're non-white anymore, and that exactly. is that drives white people absolutely insane. So that they had to say to themselves, and they came to this realization, according to Dr. Welsing, in the 1500s, as they begin to come out of Europe and start to circumnavigate the globe in their ships, and they came to the shores where other people, melanated peoples, inhabited, and they had intercourse with the women, much to their surprise, and all of their talk about how superior they are, the children came out colored. And mm-hmm. they came to a very rude awakening that if they want to maintain whiteness on the planet, then they had to control the male populations of all these melanated people. They could not allow for the introduction of melanated sperm into white women, basically. And so that is why we get this, what seems to us, this irrational behavior on their part about why they have to control and dominate everybody that is non-white. And that they are so vicious and brutal in that domination. So that, for example, we've heard accounts of how white mobs would lynch black people. And part of that mm-hmm. process of lynching, nine times out of ten, involved cutting off of black genitalia. And using those as souvenirs and trophies, because what is driving the white madness is they recognize that it is the black DNA that is the ultimate threat to their existence. And so in that way of understanding it, then the black male becomes their primary enemy, not because we have postured ourselves in a way expressing some kind of hostility towards them, but they know that they cannot stand toe-to-toe with black people on the basis of our genetic profile. If they allow this intermixing and intermarrying of the races, whiteness will cease to exist, you know, in the course of four or five generations. And so mm-hmm. rather than accept that reality, they then have taken on the position that they are going to control the behavior of every other group on the planet. And so that is why when it comes down to this genocidal campaign against, for example, the Palestinians, for example, they are completely ruthless, killing these people. They have no problem with that. any group of people that they deem as a threat, they will eliminate, plain and simple. And we are trying to figure out, well, do these people not have any moral sense? Can they not all see that all of us are human and all part of the human? Their psyche doesn't work that way. They are playing racism, white supremacy at all costs, and they will eliminate and exterminate and commit genocide against all groups that represent a threat to their existence as white folks. And most of us struggle to grasp the depth of what that kind of thinking leads to. But that is our dilemma in 2023, and it has been our dilemma ever since this encounter between Europeans and Africans on the continent. And so it's not something that we have to, you know, get all bit out of shape about, but it is something that we have to understand. And then, having understood it at the level that Neely Fuller and Francis Welsing talked about it, we now have to begin to operate like we have got common sense and recognize the depth of what it is that we're actually up against. And so we said all that to say then, so that whatever organizations that we build, whatever movements that we put together to free ourselves from this domination and this control, has to take in both the cultural dynamic, the dynamic of our being melanated people. It has to take into account the fact that Europeans and people who classify themselves as white are waging war against us continually, and the fact that capitalism as an economic system is the economic mechanism that they have devised, because it allows them to extract the wealth of the entire planet and funnel it into the hands of a handful of white men. So that capitalism is necessary as an economic model for the continued existence of racism, white supremacy. So anything that goes against capitalism will also be fought against and destroyed. In other words, in their psyche, they cannot envision a world of economic cooperation with the other peoples on the planet. They can only envision a world where they control and exert hegemonic power. And anything that threatens their ability to exert hegemonic power, they will wage war against it, up to and including nuclear annihilation. That's what we are dealing with. And so when ULU presents the need to build a global cooperative economic structure as a mechanism to counter capitalism and white racism, racism, white supremacy, our people must begin to understand the necessity and the imperative that this is the only way that we can guarantee our existence on the planet. The beauty of taking the cooperative economic approach is we have the agency amongst ourselves to do this. We don't have to run it through the Congress. We don't have to get the Supreme Court to green light it. We don't need the White House to present this. Cooperative economics can happen when we make the decision to spend our dollars in our own communities, amongst our own selves, through businesses that are group owned. Therein lies our power. And that is the genius of us lifting us as a global cooperative model and mechanism to harness the resources that do flow through our hands and to redirect them into economic institutions that we control. There's nothing that they can do to stop that other than to convince us that system is better for us than this would be for us, for ourselves.
Right.
They're losing that battle. And so they're becoming desperate, and they're becoming more dangerous. So it's important for us to understand how important it is at this point in our history to build group-owned cooperative businesses that enable us to feed, clothe, and shelter ourselves, provide our own sources of energy and transportation and communication. And the fact that because we are a majority on the planet, we will build a multi-trillion dollar economic enterprise that is second to none when we begin to grasp the power that is in our hands. And so let me pause there. There may be some questions or comments.
There are no hands up on the board right now, Brother Auntie. The comment that I have is that most of us don't see how the connection between the two of the economic system that they have in place and the fact that it's because they have to survive.
Yes.
Or they fear for their survival.
Yes.
That they created that. I think most of us don't see things in that regard. We just see it as, you know, they hate white people, you know, they hate black people, or they hate this people or that people. And the reason they call people terrorists is because they themselves are terrorized that these people will annihilate them just by them getting that close to them, you know, with sexual interaction.
Well, you're right,
thank you.
And their system is a fear-based model because
absolutely.
Because what is driving their behavior is fear of melanated people and the insertion mm-hmm. or the introduction of these melanin DNA structures into the global gene pool. That is the death knell for whiteness on planet Earth. And so it is absolutely imperative that they control not only their own group behavior, but that they control every other group's behavior as well. I mean, this really is a manic and mad way of understanding the world. And it is mm-hmm. irrational, and it is unsustainable. Now, they've gotten away with it for these many hundreds of years because of scale. In other words, so much of the world lay beyond being connected. But now with the technology that we have today and with this quickly and rapidly emerging AI and the implications of that, the globe really has been reduced to a village, to a global village. And everyone and everybody is interconnected and interdependent. But to show you how irrational that they have become in their behavior, the burning of fossil fuels has thrown off the global water cycles. And so because this carbon fuel into the atmosphere is raising the temperature on the planet, all of the natural cycles that maintain the planet as an environment in which all of us can live are being disrupted more and more and more. And so even in the face of these humongous storms that are raising the water table as the icebergs and the glaciers recede and melt and more water is in the oceans and the temperature of the oceans is rising and the temperatures on the planet is rising, as we see all of these impacts in spite of the destruction that is happening, even as we're speaking tonight, they still are trying to find, they're still trying to exploit other sources of carbon fuel, whether it's fracking or nuclear, because their economics is tied to the maintaining of fossil fuel as the primary energy source on the planet. Even though we are witnessing in real time that we simply must get off of carbon yesterday. You know, we can't do this beyond 2030 and 2040. If we're still burning it at the rate they were burning it now, there will be climate collapse. It's just, we don't have to debate that. But rather than begin to scale back, begin to look at alternative and renewable energy sources, these mad people are continuing to burn more and more fossil fuel, even as the results of that are costing billions and billions of dollars in destruction and damages. You know, floods in New York City, subway systems being flooded, neighborhoods being flooded, the possibility that the coastlines will be in danger of going under the sea level in a decade or two. And there is no global conversation around how do we avert climate catastrophe. No, all of our attention right now is on Gaza and Israel. So that will consume us for at least another 3 to 6 months. And after that, there will be some other crisis. But none of this is leading to a global conversation of how do we prevent the planet from overheating and disrupting the ability of all of us to live on the planet. But again, because they are concerned about controlling everyone's behavior so this one-tenth of the planet's population can stay in power, that's their only concern. In other words, we'll let the whole thing burn to the ground before we relinquish power. That is just how irrational they are. And so given that reality, we have to take a very deep breath and become very sober-eyed and say, okay, how do we as people, as melanated people, African people, what do we do in the face of this madness? And I argue that it starts with, one, us accepting the fact that we are African people. Drop all the hyphens, we're African people. And we're melanated. And we come out of a philosophical understanding of reality based on Ma'at, that spirit is ultimate reality, and that we must build a global cooperative economic model if we're going to continue to live on planet Earth. That is the challenge that is facing us as we have this conversation this evening, Sister Q.
No other questions at this time. Nobody's hand is up on the board.
Okay. So now the good news is that I think, one, we are a spiritual people, and we haven't survived and existed this long simply on our own energy, that the ancestors and the spiritual forces that are invisible are working overtime to assist us in our work to save the planet and to save the human family. So we have spiritual help at every turn. Our challenge is just to become crystal clear about who we are and what it is that we have to do collectively. And I think when we come together in our circles and become very clear about what we must build, the ability to build group-owned cooperative businesses, that is not a hard work. I mean, we've had Tulsas and Greenwoods and Black Wall Streets all across the country. We've done cooperative economics before. The difference that we are involved in this go-round is rather than these being individually owned businesses, now these enterprises are group owned. In other words, the entire community benefits from the surplus wealth that our businesses generate. And that's exciting because now it's not like, I mean, you know, Oprah and Tyler and these other billionaires, I mean, everybody's good, glad that you are able to live that lifestyle. But if the vast majority of our community is still living paycheck to paycheck or worse, not even able to put food on the table, then their economic success is not helping the majority of our people. We need an economic mm-hmm. model that makes sure that the surplus that our labor is generating then comes back to benefit everybody in the community so that not only do you prosper, Sister Q, but I prosper and the neighbor next door and the people down the street and around the corner, the entire neighborhood, the entire community is the recipient of this surplus value that our very hard work is producing. And that's just a matter of, and now we have all of the technological tools at our fingertips to help make this even more efficient. So in other words, we can create more surplus with less input and then redistribute that surplus back to our communities in ways that not only do we benefit, but generations to come will have the resources necessary not only to have food, clothing, and shelter, but to have state-of-the-art education and state-of-the-art health care and state-of-the-art cultural expression, whether it's graphic art or music or dance or theater or whatever. We are on the cusp of a very dynamic future. The resources are in our communities. They are inside of ourselves. And now we have the tools to put them to work. So it really boils down to looking in the mirror, embracing the image that we see, and to recognize that the divinity and the power that is in each one of us is also in each other. So the beauty and the shine that is on you, Sister Q, as soon as you see it, you recognize that it's also on each and every other brother and sister in the neighborhood. And mm-hmm. collectively, we can accomplish whatever we decide. Mm-hmm. But we can't get there if this person saying, well, I ain't got nothing to do with that African stuff. You know, I'm black, you know, or I'm African-American. Mm-hmm. And the fate, I think, of the planet, it really is resting on our shoulders and it's in our hands. But it does begin mm-hmm. with the recognition that we are an African people. We're melanated. We are people who come from spirit and that we must operate in that reality of Ma'at. And we must build cooperative economic group-owned institutions. When we do those things together, we'll see the kind of world that we've been longing for hundreds of years. I'll pause there. If you may have some questions or comments.
We have a hand up, Brother Antique, so I will take this call. Caller with the last four digits, 8912. Please state your name, where you're calling from, and make your comment or ask your question.
Yes, family, this is Brother Thurman calling from Richmond. I'm an Us Lifting Us member, and I give much praise, strong praise to Brother Ankti for us to be in your university classroom tonight, and you're bringing forth absolutely relevant information that we must have as part of our thinking, our behavior. And when we do that, we would have much more success and much more movement towards being totally liberated, including the cooperative economics. And thank you so much. And the people have to, you need to keep on doing what you're doing. And the same with Sister Q, because the people have been made confused, and we've got to do like you're doing tonight, bring forth the clarity, take the responsibility like you're doing. And thank you so much. And we've got to realize that we have been attacked in all subject areas, all areas of people activity, and we've got to counter that. So Francis Wilson talked about getting our minds on the black side of the chessboard so that whenever they make a move, we counter it to keep them from checkmating us. And we're making the proper move if this month, next month, and every month of the European calendar year, that we are not celebrating their foolishness and foulness, then we are countering it. But if we participate, then we're working against ourselves, our self-destruction, self-genocide, and keeping our people and the babies confused. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Brother Sermon. We have another caller, Brother Amti. Call us at 4-8858. State your name, where you're calling from, and make your comment or ask your question.
Yes, Brother Nefertim.
Hello?
Yes, Brother Nefertim. Can you hear me?
Peace, Brother. How are you? Yes, I can hear you.
Brother Nefertim, calling from South Korea. I'd like to thank our elder for sharing it. Wonderful wisdom. He's spot on, and hopefully my membership and donation will go towards the movement that he's talking about. I support him 100%. I support the group 100%. Thank you very much for everything. That's all I have.
Thank you very much for your comments.
Where's the brother calling from, Sister Q? He says South Korea.
Yes.
Wow. Okay.
Yes, we're everywhere.
Absolutely. Ashe. And we appreciate the words of encouragement, brother. And Brother Thurman said something. He always drops powerful wisdom, talking about the fact that the work of racism, white supremacy, touches all areas of human activity. So whether you're talking politics or economics, labor, war, education, sex, religion, every field that touches human activity has been tainted with these very pernicious ideas of racism, white supremacy. We could go on a treasure hunt or go on a search and ask ourselves the question, how does racism, white supremacy operate in the educational system or the religious system? We know in the religious system that all you have to do is walk into any Christian house of worship and see these images of a white Jesus and a white God plastered all over the place, that you know that you are standing in the midst of the teachings of racism, white supremacy. The same thing with the educational system, where they would have us think that civilization came out of Greece and not acknowledge the fact that the so-called Greek philosophers studied in Egypt long before they had anything to write because they didn't know what to write. So mm-hmm. that he's absolutely right. It's in every area of human activity, and it has to be countered continually, and that's part of the struggle. So I'm grateful him calling and sharing that.
Anything else you want to make sure people take with them from tonight's discussion, Brother Amti?
Well, you probably was going to mention, but I'll just say, by all means, visit our website, usliftingus.com, USLIFTINGUS.com. look at our work, what we are proposing. If it makes sense to you, hit the join button, and we'll rush information to you so that you can get a fuller understanding and join us in this work. We're excited. We're building. We're moving. And if you put your energy with us, we can move that much faster.
Okay. Thank you, Brother Amti. I want to thank everyone that joined us this evening as well. We invite you to join us again next Thursday evening at 9 o'clock Eastern Time for another installment of Dare to Win. Peace.
Hey, Sister Q, thank you. Appreciate you.
Mm-hmm. Looking forward to the next one.
Yeah.